the working class majority. Rick Smith.
So, fresh off his 15th trip to Washington, D.C. to advocate for patients and protect our health care, Peter Morley is back. And look, you know, I'm thrilled that the Democrats have got the House back. I'm thrilled that we're going to see more of these hearings and to talk about the issues that are important. And also, you know what? To hold this administration accountable and to highlight all of the horrible things that they've done. But like I said, fresh off his 15th trip to D.C., Peter got to testify in front of the Subcommittee on Labor and Health and Human Services, and we got Peter on the line. Peter, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, my gosh, Rick, what a wonderful introduction. Thank you so much. That was beautiful. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Look, you're one of my heroes, man. I mean, you know, to do the things that you do, given the health challenges that you have, actually absolutely inspirational.
Thank you. Thank you. It was, you know, ever since I've been going to D.C., I've put the offer out there for senators, for House representatives, but for someone to finally take me up on my offer was wonderful. It was very humbling. I was extremely honored. But I can tell you, it was probably one of the most personal and most difficult things I've ever had to do, because I had to write, you know, from a very deep personal place, very intimate place, and allow myself to be vulnerable in front of, you know, a lot of people who might not be compassionate or sympathetic during a hearing, which is different than the now, I believe I hit 250 meetings over the last 2 years in Congress. So I didn't know what to expect, but I gave it my all, and I feel that I spoke from my heart. And the most difficult thing for me was I had the weight of 130 million people with pre-existing conditions on my shoulders, and that weighed extremely heavily on me. And I was on the verge of becoming very emotional during the hearing. But you know, I'm so grateful again and so honored. I can't tell you how thrilled I was to be able to speak.
Yeah, but it's important for people to hear stories like yours. And, you know, as when these hearings come up, I try and find and pick out the stories of actual people. You know, when they bring, you know, academics out and they bring out, you know, think tank heads, I really don't care what they have to say anymore. They've dominated the conversation for so long, and they've sterilized the conversations, be it, down the list of anything, healthcare, you know, wages, you know, working conditions, whatever. They've sterilized the conversation so much that, you know, we no longer seem to have a heart in it. But I want to hear real people's stories. So when I was, you know, watching some of yours, I'm going, you know, this is just, how can you sit and listen to this story and not be moved, not be affected, not be, you know, grabbed into wanting to change and make things better? I just don't know how you sit there and are not moved by it.
Well, thank you, first of all. That's very kind of you. You know, sitting next to the Republican witness, and you know, I was actually, you know, I was close enough to him to see his little, you know, doodles and notes. And it was just, you know, I couldn't understand him half the time. He spoke in circles, and you know, the very interesting thing, and you know, I'm not going to interpret it one way or the other, but he misrepresented a very crucial fact, because I brought up the important note that before the ACA, I actually had an injury and I had a lapse of insurance coverage. And this isn't a story that I've ever shared on Twitter, but it's a story about me and the fact that, because, you know, I was younger, I thought I was healthier, and I thought that I could survive, you know, an insurance, you know, gap, and thinking, hey, you know, as long as I took vitamin C and, you know, I you know, didn't...
You're young and bulletproof.
Right, exactly, invincible. So, you know, I had an injury, and then when I had, you know, health insurance, it was considered a pre-existing condition. And even though I was pre-approved for a surgery, in retrospect, all my claims were denied, and it cost tens of thousands of dollars. So I've been in that position. So I know what it's like to live that life and the life of a lot of people, you know, at that time. And I understand people's fears, and it's my greatest fear now because I just don't have one pre-existing condition. I have so many. I say 10 plus because I really, honest to God, do not want to know how many pre-existing conditions I really do have.
Well, the reality is, Peter, if you live a life, you're going to have things happen, and things, they do happen over time. And, you know, everything can turn into a, everything's a pre-existing condition. And, you know, to go back to your story, I mean, I don't know whether you chose not to get the health care and you could have afforded it or you couldn't have. I don't know. But, you know, a lot of people, you know, they end up losing jobs. You know, you go back to 2009, millions of people lost their jobs.
Right.
And with it, their health insurance, which is, again, is why I'm an advocate of doing away with employer-based health care and having a single-payer system that follows you from cradle to grave so that you don't have lapses. That you don't have these moments of, well, sorry, you were broke for 6 months and you didn't have health insurance, so shame on you. It just seems ludicrous that we continue to put up with this.
Yeah, you know, it really, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, that isn't something, I mean, we spoke about this and I'm really grateful. I got Congresswoman or Chairwoman DeLauro. She was amazing, awesome. You know, I've seen her on C-SPAN. I've to see her in action and to see her story. And she has her own healthcare story about surviving breast cancer, and you know, just to see where we are, where we've come, and to see the Trump administration being held accountable. You know, I mean, there were almost 30 meetings on Wednesday, from everything from gun violence to climate change to, and there were several on pre-existing conditions. So it just, I mean, the House is moving at a really rapid pace. You know, which is wonderful to see.
Right.
Our healthcare system is a mess right now. I'm not going to lie. And, you know, the stories are still crucial because people still need to see them. I've never, you know, since we've stopped the ACA repeal, I've never, and I've told you this before, never felt that we were ever comfortable. You know, I've always felt that we still have so much work ahead of us.
Yeah.
You know, because getting to what you described is, there's a lot of work, and it doesn't happen overnight, and it's going to take years. And I think there are people that want it to happen overnight, and then there's the reality of our current healthcare system, and we're going to have to meet somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, you just can't flip a switch. I mean, things just don't. You can't flip a switch and it happens. And
right.
I think we're seeing that with, you know, we had a 35-day government shutdown. And
right.
Most people think that you just flip the switch, everything goes back to the
right.
way it was, and everybody gets their paychecks. And you go,
right.
You know, there was just a report the other day that, you know, there are, you know, tens of thousands of people who still haven't received a paycheck this year because you don't just flip the switch. It just doesn't happen.
Right. And, you know, actually, thank you for saying that, because that was another one of the hearings of the economic impact of the shutdown. So there's another hearing that was. And because of what you just mentioned, you know, those are definitely the realities. And the people who had to go to places for food pantries during the shutdown. And these are people that never expected to be, you know, I spoke to some of them, and they were like never expected to, you know, have to go somewhere for food, but they didn't have a paycheck coming in, and they had to feed their family.
No, and you look at this, and you know, there's I keep asking the question, you know, when do we say enough is enough? Now, look, as you've said, this is going to take years in the making. There's organizing that's been going on for the last decade. Actually, on healthcare issues, there have been people organizing for the last four decades,
right?
Trying to move us towards a system of health justice where you go, look, because it only makes sense to me, Peter, that, we already, and I've said this a number of times in the program, we already take the most costly people out of the healthcare system. We pay for the young, because healthcare is used predominantly in your first 5 years and your last 5 years. So we take your kids out of the system because you can put everybody on CHIP, and we take seniors out of the equation because you can put them on Medicare.
Right.
We take the poor out of the equation because you can put them on Medicaid because they tend to have problems as well. And people who are really sick, we put them on Medicaid as well for the most part. So we've taken all of the sick people out of the system and we've given the insurance companies the most profitable. And it's always been curious to me where we go, if we're doing all of this, why don't we pull the more profitable people in to help pay for everything else? It just makes common. And maybe it's just me and I was dropped on my head or something, but it just seems like common sense to me.
Well, I testified in the morning on Wednesday, and in the afternoon, I met, with the head of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, Frank Plohn. And then, I met with Congressman Lujan, who's the Assistant Speaker. Am I saying that title right? But we had a great conversation about a Medicaid buy-in program, which, is something that will continue to strengthen the ACA and to lower premiums and to allow more access for healthcare. So this is something like extremely innovative that will only help shore up the exchanges. I mean, I know there's a lot of people out there that are advocating for Medicare for All. And, Congressman DeLauro and Jan Schakowsky have come out with, Medicare for America, and they're wonderful, great policies. But again, my goal has always been to strengthen and enhance what we already have. And to go from there, we have a foundation that we need to, that obviously needs to be fixed and needs to be strengthened. And from there, we can keep going towards that access and healthcare for all. Again, it's not going to happen overnight, but it will happen. And if we all work together, there's definitely strength in numbers.
No, I was going to ask you about that because you're advocating an incrementalist kind of, we're going to slowly march our way through that, as opposed to where the progressives right now are kind of moving full bore,
right,
for single payer Medicare for All, and kind of scrap everything else and let's get down that road. Just yesterday there was, the news media, wanted to create a dust up between AOC and Nancy Pelosi, over the Green New Deal. And also, a couple of days before that over healthcare, because
right,
Pelosi's guy had given a presentation to Blue Cross, basically laying out, don't worry about that single payer stuff. We're going to be just fine. Thank you very much. My problem with that is doesn't that kind of rip us apart? Don't we as a country have to decide where we want to go on a certain level?
Oh my goodness, it's such, I agree. It is, there's no, it doesn't do, the Democrats as a party, it doesn't do us any good to be divisive. That sort of goes without saying.
Yeah, we got enough of that coming out of Trump.
We also, unfortunately, have some of it coming out of Virginia, as I've listened to some of your own, but that doesn't resonate with the party. But we don't need, going forward, and this is already going to 2020, but we don't need another Bernie versus Hillary. There are going to be like tons of, presidential nominations for the Democratic nomination. And we really all need to stick together and get behind whoever is the nominee.
Yeah, ultimately, but whoever carries the mantle, you're gonna want to fall in behind to help move. Because 4 more years of Trump, I think, would be disastrous.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, of course. I mean, that at this point, I believe we can all agree upon. But as far as you know, Nancy Pelosi versus AOC. Like, you know, I don't get involved with that, but I support, I do support progressive ideas. I support all ideas, and I'm open to all ideas. And, you know, my advocacy for healthcare has always been about the person, the individual, and advocating for them and right. sharing their story, at, whether it's ACA, Medicaid, Medicare, you know, there's some people who have reached out to me who have a problem accessing because of the new opioid bill, have a problem accessing their, you know, pain pills. Because we have, as you know, a very huge problem in this country with opioids. So, you know, and these are the people that get lost in those bills and those unfortunate, you know, conversations. So those are the people that I try to represent. And I want to make sure their voices are heard and they don't get lost. So I try to, you know, I try to keep my voice in that advocacy. But I also, at the same time, realize that, you know, I have to stand behind the people that are willing to fix the ACA. And that's why I've chosen in the Senate to work with the Senate Help Committee that are responsible for, you know, the ACA and, you know, the committees in the House that will help do that as well. But, you know, fixing the ACA, expanding Medicaid in those 15 states that still don't have it, especially Texas and Florida with the two largest populations of the states that do not have Medicaid expansion right now. So those are my goals. Right. And, you know, speaking to Congressman Lujan about Medicaid buy-in, again, this is only going to expand affordable health care to people that don't have it, allowing people to buy into Medicaid that, you know, they don't need an income qualification. It's going to be, you know, and they're going to have the same access that somebody on Medicaid has. And Medicaid works for a lot of people.
Yeah,
and
it's true.
Not just as a safety net, right?
No, you're right. So let's go back to your testimony real quick because,
sure.
You know, how was it received by the folks on the panel and, you know, what kind of pushback did you get?
Well, I, you know, the unfortunate thing is half of the Democrats on the panel were sequestered by a security briefing for the Appropriations Committee. So half of the people that would have asked me a couple more questions weren't there. None of the Republicans asked me a question.
Yeah, because how do you attack somebody of your stature who, you know, look, I give you credit, you're non-political in this stuff. Your advocacy is across the board. Politics doesn't seem to play into it at all. It's about getting access for people. So I can't imagine how you would attack that.
Well, I mean, one thing that I did want to say, and I unfortunately didn't get the opportunity, so in case they're listening to this for any reason, I did want to say that there have been 7 or 8 people, legislators, maybe more than that, specifically in the House that have sat down with me, and they've all been Democrats. But I wanted to let the 7 Republicans on the committee know that I would love to continue the conversation about healthcare with each and every one of them. And I just want to also let you know, after that, I also had a meeting with Congressman Woodall in the Georgia 7th District, and we had a great conversation. I was actually there with one of his constituents, and he won by about 400 votes, and that was the, I believe, the it went on for a few weeks after the midterms.
Right.
And then the next day, he announced that he was not seeking reelection, so maybe I had something to do with that. You never know.
We can hope. So let me ask you the last question I've got for you.
Sure.
What do you want people doing? I mean, you know, obviously, you're doing the yeoman's, you're doing multiple jobs here. You're carrying a lot of water. What should the rest of us be doing?
I think the most important thing is still, as I've said all along, share your share not only your stories with your legislators, your House member, your two senators, also on the state levels, like for those people in the states that haven't expanded Medicaid, get involved with their state senators or their assembly people or whatever it's called in your state, and help, you know, expand Medicaid in those states, because that is something that expands the access to health care. But also, you know, people think that their voices don't matter. And I've been told over and over again, it's not even like, I used to think it was thousands of calls would matter, but I've been told, like, you know, if, you know, 200 or 300 people call, like, that's something that really does make an impact and make a difference. So whether it's about healthcare, which, of course, you know, that's my lane on the highway, but whether it's about healthcare, whether it's about voting rights, whether it's about climate change, whether it's about anything, the most important thing is don't be silent. It takes 2 to 3 minutes to pick up the phone, call your senators, tell them you don't have to say much. You just have to say, I'm concerned about, you know, fill in the blank issue, and it gets counted. Your voice is heard. So I want people to continue to be engaged, and the people that aren't engaged, I want them to take 2 or 3 minutes of their time a week and call their legislators, and honest to God, it makes such a difference.
Yeah, and if you got a little extra time, write a letter. I'm told that is the most effective way of getting their attention, and put a stamp on it and send it through the U.S. Postal Service, because they need the work too. But as I'm told, that's the you want to get their attention. That's the way you do it as well. Other than showing up at his office screaming and hollering, of which that'll probably get attention that you don't really want. But it is what it is. Peter, I appreciate the work that you do, the passion that you have. Good on you, brother.
Well, Rick, thank you so much. And thank you for always, you know, reaching out to me. As you can probably hear from my voice, I am exhausted from being in D.C. for almost 3 days. But such a pleasure. And actually, it's such an honor for your support. You've always been a big supporter of mine. And, you know, I've told you this many times, but I'm always available for you.
Good stuff, Peter. Thank you so much. Rest up.